Hello and welcome to, oh, are we good? Oh yeah, all right, run that back. Hello and welcome to another edition of the CLNS Media Celtics postgame show. My name is Taylor McLeod and I'm here alongside my co-host Joe Choquette. And we'll be here for the next hour taking your calls, breaking down Celtics-Cavs. Celtics won big tonight, 128-95 over the Cleveland Cavaliers. The Cavs came into this one at 4-16. So it wasn't much of a rematch of last year's Eastern Conference Finals, but the Celtics, who have been kind of teetering on the edge of mediocrity all year, they've had this habit of playing down to their competition, even lesser than their competition, even when their competition's been real bad. So it was good for the C's to, you know, to take on a team like the Cavaliers, who, without Kevin Love, who's hurt, without J.R. Smith, who left the team, without a bunch of guys, you know, really take advantage of a inferior talent team and really dominate them. There are some points in the first half that I started to get a little bit nervous that, not that the Celtics were about to lose or about to, you know, lose control of the game, but the Cavs were hanging around a little more than you want a team that's not talented and has a terrible record to hang around. But, you know, Kyrie and the Celtics really turned it up when they had to, and Joe and I were just talking off air, and the thing about this win is a lot of times with these big wins, it's difficult to find specific points to talk about because this one was over halfway through the third quarter. So, you know, you kind of start just watching the game more as a fan, not as an analyst. There's still things to watch, but when the other team is so limited in terms of what they can do, you know, on offense and defense, you don't get the best analysis out of it. But Joe and I were talking off air, and the Celtics just did exactly what they're supposed to do, and that's just beat the hell out of a bad basketball team. What do you think about tonight's game, Joe?
That exactly. I mean, going into it, I was kind of anticipating, you know, or I was hoping against hope that I wasn't going to see a repeat of, to your point, playing down to competition. This is a team you blow out 15 plus guaranteed every night of the week, even on the backside of a back-to-back. So watching them come in, you know, first quarter, second quarter, establish that 10-point lead going into the half. You know, I always look at the game as two games. It's the first half and the second half. So you try to build your lead first half and then maintain and expand your lead second half. And that's exactly what we saw tonight. I mean, to your point, what a hapless Cavs team that is. With JR gone, you have Kevin Love hurt, LeBron left in the offseason, and then you got Korver who got traded this week. And then the coach gets fired last week. So this was a layup of all layups, but it could have also been a trap game. And it was nice to see Kyrie come out, set the tone early. I really like the fact that this was a true Brad Stevens game too, Taylor. I mean, this was a 12, 13 man deep game tonight. You know, granted, all garbage minutes in the fourth for the deep bench, but he got them all in and got them some time.
Right. I agree. And tonight's an opportunity, playing against a bad team, playing against a mess of a team that, even though it feels like an Eastern Conference rematch should be a bigger deal, even with some pieces missing. But if you look at the Cavs roster, it's just so bad. And a lot of the players that made the last 4 years so fun between the Celtics and Cavs, obviously LeBron, you know, what can't you say about that guy? What can you say about that guy? He leaves, the Cavs change. That was always going to happen. But there's still little things. It's like there's always been chippiness between JR and the Celtics. Kevin Love's a really good player. So it's like, even though you see it on the schedule and you circle it, you circle it a little bit and you're like, all right, well, that's a rematch. There could be some interesting stuff. Colin Sexton's a lottery pick, wearing Kyrie's old number. It is Kyrie versus old team. But then you get to tonight and there's just, you know, no hype around it, nothing really going on. And Al Horford's out, Jaylen Brown's out. So I think there's two sides of the coin. On one side, it was pretty much a boring game. The first quarter and a half were all right. Kyrie made a nice play, came off a screen up top, threw a pocket pass to Baines, and that really kind of blew it open. That was the final straw that broke Cleveland's back. But besides that, it's a boring game. However, like you just said, because you have some starters out and you're playing against a bad team, we did get to see guys like, you know, PJ Dozier and Brad Wanamaker, and even Robert Williams got 7 minutes a run, which was nice. He unfortunately lost his 1,000% scoring or his 1,000% shooting percentage. But outside of
that's because he chose not to dunk on one.
Yeah, I mean, it's good to see those guys run. So games like tonight can be real boring for fans, but they're good opportunities for like you said, for a true Brad Stevens game.
Absolutely. I mean, watching Robert Williams there in his 8 minutes of play tonight, the blocks were impressive when they came. You know, that deep part of the bench, you know, from an analyst perspective, you know, there's not much we're going to get from that. But, you know, it is nice seeing Wanamaker come out and just rain a three right off the bat. And that was good to see. Dozier, I thought, played okay. And you know, I thought Tice looked like he was kind of rounding into form. Again, I try to weight everything against the competition they're playing. But, you know, Tice looked a little snappier tonight. I actually liked watching him play.
Yeah, I think, as I've said all along, I said it in the preseason, I've said it early regular season, I think that Tice's biggest asset, not only is he a good, talented basketball player, but he's just another big that can spell Baines and spell Horford for periods so they can rest their legs a little bit more than they were able to last year after Tice got hurt. And, you know, Baines and Horford are both in their early to mid-30s, so that's important for guys like those. Before we get too much farther, we do have a caller waiting on the call line. He's been around for a while. And before we get to him, I do want to remind you that the call line is 347-215-7771. Again, 347-215-7771. You know, give us a call. Joe and I will be here until 10:30 breaking down the game. You can call in, talk about tonight's game, anything going on with the Celtics. But before we get to that, 310, what do you have for us?
Hey, salutations to the Celtic Nation and to the Celtics Late Night Show, CLNS Media. I like your show, guys. Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, thanks for listening.
Okay, my name is Jerry over here in L.A., representing for the Green Nation here. So I'm looking at the stat line. We got 12 more assists. I like to see that. That's always a sign of good basketball. And I saw on the bench when it was garbage time, and some of the guys were making plays out there. You see Rozier, which is one of the guys I worry about the most as far as his emotional state, psychological state with the team, because he's the one most rumored to be traded and moved and, you know, bickering about his minutes. So I like to see him on the bench cheering the guys on. Shows a good team chemistry, a good team spirit, like, you know, like Brad coaches. He coaches them just to be about that day and winning the game that day. And I think it's starting to kind of settle in. The rotations are starting to settle in, obviously, because of the two guys that missed some time, which is going to go – something that's going to happen throughout the season, and they made the most of it. The guys that got their chance, like Baines and Tice, like you guys were mentioning. Kyrie, I believe, had his best game that I've seen certainly all this year and perhaps even going back to last year. He was so efficient and nice assist and only in 27 minutes. You know, I was happy to see – Bob Williams in there. He got two blocks. He got a couple of rebounds, and he should have had a couple of dunks. So I think he only got one dunk. And it's looking like the team is rounding out. I know it's a bad team, and I know the last team, New Orleans, was not, you know, kind of on the skids. But that's what happens in the NBA. It's a streaks league. Teams go through runs. Teams hit a bad patch on the road, and they just work through it. And this is a good sign that's going to help them come together. Gordon Hayward, more aggressive, looking like a little bouncier. I was watching the Scalabrini saying that Ainge and Brad Stevens says that Gordon Hayward dominated the practice on Wednesday. So you can see that dog in him is starting to wake up, that hungry wolf that was always in him from Utah, man. And I was excited, and I'm still happy, man.
Yeah, I mean, I think you made a bunch of good points, and obviously thank you for the call. I think the point that you made about Terry Rozier cheering on the bench, obviously Joe and I have talked a lot about Rozier, and I think we've mentioned him a lot because of, like what Jerry said, there's so much speculation about, is he going to get moved, is he not, is he happy with his minutes, is he not, is he playing poorly because he's unhappy, or whatever it is. So I think that even though it might seem inconsequential, to see a guy like him, you know, who's been going through some stuff up on the bench cheering for the Brad Wanamakers of the world is big, because it shows you that even though there might be some problems, some issues, at the end of the day, these guys are teammates and they're pulling for one another, and that's how you win championships. And if this team wants to win championships, they have to have that camaraderie. I know you saw it a couple years ago when, you know, LeBron and the Cavs were up big and they're sitting over in the corner flipping water bottles, not up cheering on the bench. And the Celtics team was standing for most of the third and the fourth quarter cheering on those, you know, third string guys. And I think that's really big.
No, I agree. I just I think somebody got in Terry's ear. I mean, because it's a complete opposite of the disjointed looks we got from the bench last week, where he just seemed disengaged, pouting. I don't know if it's his team that got in his ear or if somebody said to him, hey, you're not doing yourself any favors in the open market down the line if you're going to look like you're that disinterested. 21 minutes tends to change people's, you know, perception of their playing time. Throwing up 10 points is always a good thing. And, you know, he shot 50% from the field. I mean, he made the most of his time. He had three rebounds, three assists. I thought he did okay. I mean, sadly, in this huge win, he's the only player out of all 13 who played with a minus for the game. He was a minus three.
Yeah, I saw that. You know, like you said, he hit a couple shots tonight. He did a couple things, and it's nice to see. I don't want to dive too deeply into speculation about whether he's going to be here in a month or not, whether he's going to get moved, whether he's not. I think that's a tired argument, and I think it's an argument to be had when we know actual information. Because as of now, it's like we have a handful of tweets from a couple beat reporters. We got one tweet from Rozier that he immediately came back and said, no, that's not asking for a trade. So ultimately, we don't know anything. We know that he's probably unhappy because, you know, we've watched him long enough at this point, and we saw how well he played last year when he got his opportunity. And I can't imagine there's a single competitor, you know, in Little League to professional sports who's happy when they know they can ball out, but they're on the bench. But the fact that he's on the bench cheering and being a positive teammate and, you know, keeping things positive around the team and not ruining things, that's a good sign for the Celtics, like we just talked about. Moving through Jerry's points, he talked a little bit about that New Orleans game, and I think that New Orleans game, even though the Pelicans were 10-10, I think that New Orleans game was super important for the Celtics team, because from Jump Street in that game, the Celtics came out firing on all cylinders. Kyrie was just pushing the ball as fast as he could, running that two-man game without getting dunks, getting shots, getting open looks for his teammates, getting open looks for himself. So like Joe said with this game tonight, when you have these teams that aren't playing their best basketball, you have to go for the neck, especially when you're a championship contender. I think they did it against New Orleans. I think they did it tonight. What do you think about that New Orleans game and just how that feeds into a game like tonight?
Well, I think that's why you have on your team. I think that's why you bring out, you get yourself a Kyrie Irving. He's a guy who's going to set a tone for a game for you. So having him come out and just ball out in the New Orleans game and then come out again tonight and set the tone, like we're not going to play down to our competition. That's one of those intangible talents that Kyrie brings to your team, you know, outside of your stat sheets. And you need him to do that right now, because when you look at that roster from the starting five, he is that, he's that spiritual energy leader. He's got to, he needs to set that tone. And when he does, it really opens up the rest of the game. I also think that, you know, looking at addition through subtraction is another facet as to why we're seeing these better starts. You know, we're starting without Hayward on the floor, and arguably at least for the next, until it stops working, you got to roll with that. I think putting Smart out there and knowing that he's not a primary target offensively helps spread that ball around to the other players on the court and allows the team to kind of find more of a rhythm, rather than feeling like you've got to force it to Gordon, you got to force it to Al, you got to force it to Jalen, you got to force it to Jason. If you can, and let's not forget, Kyrie's an offense first player. So that's five guys that are all legit shooters on the court at the same time. I think by breaking that up a little bit and bringing in a Smart and bringing in a Morris senior, who he knows he's going to be the second or third option look off the offense, really helps open up the offense for the other players and allows the team to find their flow earlier in the game. I mean, you and I have talked about it since the onset of the preseason. Getting out to a lead, specifically in this league, is so important, because you expend so much of your energy capital trying to recover from a deficit in the first half, and then in the beginning part of a second half, that you're typically gassed with six to go in the fourth, and that's no way to keep coming back and trying to close out heart attack games. You've got to establish that lead, step on the throat, and just keep rolling until it's out of reach.
I agree, and I think the point you made about addition by subtraction is really important. And no matter how hard of a pill it is to swallow, I think sometimes when you have a guy like Smart starting that isn't an offensive threat, but is capable of, you know, knocking down the occasional shot, I will not have the argument about smart shooting percentage right now. I don't have the energy for that. I don't think you have the energy for that. Not after a blowout win like tonight. That's not what I want to do. But having him out there and just having that defensive presence, he's going to guard the other team's best player, or best scorer at least. Like, having that presence out there with the starters, first of all, it makes it so that you have more opportunity for the other four guys to score. And on a night like tonight where you have Jalen and Al out, you have more opportunities for that top three, or at least the top two of Irving and Tatum to score. And then tonight you add in a guy like Morris. And I think it just really, really adds other dimensions to this team that I've got to assume Brad is going to explore throughout the rest of the season. But before we jump into that, I do want to head back over to the call line. We've got a call waiting from a guy I'm pretty sure I know who it is down in Florida. But before we get to him, I just want to remind you that the call line is 347-215-7771. 347-215-7771. 941, is this who I think it is?
Who do you think it is?
Nick. What's up?
Of course it's me. I missed the game, just called in to hear what happened in the game. Obviously, I can see the score, complete blowout of the Cavaliers. Clearly not the same Cavaliers team that there was that we saw last season. My question for you guys is, where was Jaylen Brown? Does anyone know what's happening to Jaylen Brown? I know he was on the bench recently. And I think that's a solid move. What happened to him? Is he injured? Is it just one of these healthy scratches?
So,
you know,
So last weekend he came off the rim and hit his lower back on the ground real hard. And
again?
He missed Monday's game in New Orleans. No, he missed Monday's game in New Orleans. No, not like last year against Minnesota. It wasn't that scary. It was just kind of like a tailbone thing. And it's like lower back, and I think he's working his way back. But he missed Monday's game in New Orleans and tonight's game against Cleveland.
That's unfortunate. I mean, I think that it's been mentioned several times on this show that Brad Stevens has such a glut of talent that he's, like, his big challenge is trying to find, minutes for everybody. And I think when you have situations like, and I love Jaylen Brown. I'm not, taking anything away from Jaylen Brown. I think the team is better with Jaylen Brown. And once Brad Stevens gets his rotations and his minutes and everything else settled, the team will definitely be better with Jaylen Brown. But I think that now, for the time being, as he's trying to work everything and going out, we've all been talking about, reintegrate Gordon Hayward, who had a fantastic game, by the way, tonight. I think 14 points on 6 of 9 shooting, 4 rebounds, 4 assists. That's the all-around game that you want from Gordon Hayward. I think fantastic, especially off the bench. When you take away a player like Jaylen Brown or any of these guys that, that want minutes, that need shots, that take shots, it requires less of Brad Stevens to have to think about, there's a guy on the bench that's going to want some minutes. And I tuned in just as you guys were talking about my man Terry Rozier. I tend to agree with the, I tried to deny it. I fought with guys like callers like Isaiah for all last season about, who was going to stay and who was going to go. But it really seems like, especially like the tweet that you mentioned that he tweeted and then pulled, kind of retracted. But it's always that when it comes to tweets or comments like that, the retraction means less to me than, the initial comment. And you know what I'm saying? Like the retractions are kind of like the politically correct, oh no, I didn't mean it that way. Terry Rozier wants to be a starting point guard in this league. I think he deserves to be a starting point guard, at least for half of the teams in this league, maybe a third of the teams in this league. He has the talent to do so. And I'm not sure, the question for you guys that I have for Terry Rozier, seeing the way Terry Rozier is, it seems to me that Terry Rozier has been, his stat line has been hurt almost the most of the, out of the changing in rotations, the adjustments that have been made this first quarter of the season. It seems that Terry Rozier's, compared to where he was last season in the playoffs, it seems that Terry Rozier's kind of caught the short end of the stick. Do you guys think, and I've asked this of other hosts before when I wasn't, hosting myself, and I asked other hosts, I've asked callers when I was hosting, do you guys think that Terry Rozier's cut in minutes and obviously cut in production, do you think that's going to hurt his value come free agency, or do you think other teams already know what Terry Rozier is capable of doing, and they're not really looking at this season as, well, is this, you know, the make or break Terry Rozier? Is Terry Rozier losing money is the bigger question. Is Terry Rozier, right, is it hurting his value, and is he losing money?
I don't think it hurts his value as a player, because I think people know what he is and saw him play last year, and I don't think anyone will see this season and be like, oh, he took a wild nosedive. I think they see what's happening. However, when it comes to the negotiating table, I think that teams will definitely try to use this as a ploy to spend less money. You know what I mean? So I don't think he's worth any less than, but I could see him getting less because of it. So I guess, yeah, you're right. His value is going down, even though I don't think his value on the floor is going down.
Yeah. And to add on to that, I don't think his free agent value is dipping at all, regardless of how many minutes he plays. I think, to your point, Nick, he established who he is as a player last year. What I think we're trying to kind of dance around here is if there's an in-season move, I do think that that's hurting his trade value. So your return on the trade, I don't think you're going to get quite what you would have gotten if you had made a move sometime shortly after the end of last season. So the in-season move, I think, yeah, I don't think his value is very high. His off-season move, I think he's not losing any value. I think what he has to be careful of is a 24-year-old NBA professional basketball player. He's got to be careful with the social media. He's got to be careful what he's putting out there. He has to remember that he's got 5-6 cameras on him just about every time he steps on the hardwood, and they're watching. They watched last week when he was looking dejected on the sidelines. They're watching again tonight when he's standing up, holding up the three when – you know, other players are dropping, especially the deep bench players. So it's that maturation of understanding who you are in the league. And then in regards to who he is with the Celtics this year, you know, Taylor and I have talked on the broadcast that we've done about, you know, he and Jaylen Brown specifically struggling to find their new role and their new defined role in this talent-laden team. Where exactly do they fit in? And when they are on the court, it's almost as if, you know, Jaylen more than Terry, they almost seem lost in the role, in the new role. They haven't quite found it. They haven't found that rhythm, that flow of the game yet that allowed them to be the players that they were last year with the production that they had last year. So it'll be interesting to watch as, you know, as Jaylen's back heals up, as Al comes back, and now you're right back to where we were, say, early last week when you've got a full roster and you've got to find minutes and shots for everybody that wants to play. And that's where it's going to get a little more interesting for me down the road.
Absolutely. And I think that, sorry, I'll bring you right back in, Nick. So Nick had talked a little bit about, you know, Jaylen coming off the bench and that being a possibility. And then, you know, Joe, you brought up the maturation for Rozier, but a guy that we always talk about how mature he is Jaylen Brown. And I think it came up again today. In an interview, you know, someone asked him that when he comes back from this injury, because this lineup seems to be working and has worked for the last two games, would he be willing to come off the bench? And, you know, without skipping a beat, he's like, yeah. He's like, if we're winning and that's what needs to happen, I'm fine with that. That'd be great. He said, there's a lot of talented people on this team. Sometimes you got to do what you got to do. And for a 22-year-old in his third year in the league, when he's supposed to be, you know, like, you know, showing glimpses of being a superstar, the number three pick 3 years ago, I think that's really big. In terms of maturity, and also just in terms of like his willingness to do what it takes to win. Nick, do you think that Brown to the bench would be a more of a temporary thing while, you know, they figure things out, or do you think it could be a thing where, you know, it's for an extended period of time?
You know, it's difficult to say because it really depends on, you know, like, I agree with you completely. I think the two players after Rozier, Jaylen Brown is the next in line in terms of players that have had difficulty adjusting to the roles. But I think if you know anything about Jaylen Brown beyond what you see on the basketball court, you know that Jaylen Brown is kind of like a savant. He's like, he's a very intelligent guy. His world doesn't revolve entirely around basketball. His world revolves around, I think he's very conscious and very considered about what he can do. He like using basketball, using his professional basketball career as an example
exactly.
to others. What he
that's
can what he can
yeah.
do with it. Say what now?
No, that's
I didn't mean to speak over you.
Is a good point. Yes, keep going.
Yeah, he's not just thinking about, yeah, how can I pad my stats? How can I be the baddest guy on the court? How can I be, you know, this? And, of course, I think he wants to be the best player that he can possibly be, and I think he's obviously put in work. Every single season except for this season, I haven't really seen much improvement in terms of his game this season, and I think that's probably a consequence of, you know, the minutes, the rotations, the everything else, the readjustment to Hayward and to Kyrie coming back and everything else. But I think that every single season we've seen him, he's improved some aspect of his game. The first season he was out there, he couldn't really dribble. He seemed to dribble himself in the holes. He was into traps. He was losing the ball. Didn't shoot, I don't think, from the three as well as he did in his second and third season. He added aspects to his game, but I think that Jaylen Brown is one of those guys that's conscious of his image. He's conscious of what he can do as a professional basketball player, not just on the court but off the court. If you've ever heard him speak, he's an extremely intelligent kid, a young man, I should say, extremely intelligent young man that wants to make a change, not just, you know what I'm saying, to the basketball, but wants to use his influence as a basketball player to do something bigger. And I think that if he were to start, you know, complaining or having a problem with, you know, minutes or not, you know, start acting, you know, sulky or those type of things, I think he's fully aware that if he started acting like that, it undermines what he's been trying to do. I mean, the first year he was in the league, or the second year he was in the league, he started something for young rookie players to, you know, to get acclimated, kind of like an orientation for young players. He took that initiative himself. He's talked about social issues when a lot of players shy away from social issues. That's the big criticism of Michael Jordan. Now, Michael Jordan never talked about social issues. LeBron James opened a school, so LeBron James is going, Michael Jordan is a terrible person or what, you know, just to be hyperbolic. And I think that if Jaylen Brown started acting a little bit, you know, like I was saying, sulky, a little bit odd, a little bit whatever, off about that, I think it would sacrifice his image. And I think that he knows that he's only, what is he, in his fourth year now? Is this a contract year? Is this his third year? I'm not sure. I'm not exactly. But it's so hard to keep track of all the. Which is third year, fourth year?
Yep, year three.
Year three. So he still has one more year on his rookie contract. So, number one, he can't really act, you know, I don't think that he would anyway, but he can't really, you know, speak out of, you know, he can't really speak out the side of his neck right now because he still has another year on his rookie contract to which he can improve and whatever. And I think there's going to be changes, if not at, you know, the trade deadline, in the off season. There's clearly going to be some players leaving, and there's probably going to be some type of trade. We know how Danny Ainge works. I know there's the Rose Rule and all that other stuff, but, you know, I think that Danny Ainge would do almost anything short of slapping his grandmother to get, you know, AD or somebody into Boston. I don't want to get into trade talk or anything like that, but I think Jaylen Brown knows that he's such an intelligent person that he knows that if he just sits back and chills, does what Coach Stevens asks of him, does what Danny Ainge asks of him, the opportunities will come. And if that opportunity happens to be someplace else, and I have no reason to think that it will, but if it happens to be someplace else, he can still accomplish his ultimate goal, because I think his ultimate goal is looking forward beyond just basketball. Basketball is a vehicle for him. But I really love Jaylen Brown. I think it's unfortunate that, you know, he's kind of, like you said, kind of got lost in, you know, in the rotations. But I think he'll get it back. I don't think I don't think and with Terry Rozier either. I agree with what Joe, how do you pronounce your last name? I'm sorry, I don't want to be like
Choquette.
Choquette. I was gonna say Choquette but Choquette. That's perfect. As you were saying, teams will do anything to get, you know what I'm saying, the max value for minimum in return. And I absolutely agree with you that if there is a trade involving Terry Rozier, what's happening now in terms of looking at his stats, you know, averaging in single digits, in whatever else, in points and whatever else, they will use that. But I think if he hits free agency, people are fully conscious of what Terry Rozier can do. He's a fantastic ball handler. These are first world problems that we're talking about right now. I know the Celtics'
right?
schedule isn't like their record isn't the best record, and I don't mean to like filibuster. The record isn't the best right now, but I'm one of those people that fully believes, you know, come February, come All-Star break, they'll be in full swing and ready to go and be contenders after that. And these players are all going to adjust. I really believe that. And I think that Terry Rozier, Jaylen Brown are going to be guys that, that adjust and get it done. That's
so,
one last thing before I let you guys get back to, you know, get back to what you were talking about. My man, we had a blowout tonight. So my man Bob Williams got on the court.
Sir.
The only negative thing about the Bob Williams game tonight, he was averaging 100% from the field.
I know,
until
man.
Tonight he went 1-for-3. So that's
and you know why, Nick? I know you said you didn't see most of the game, but you know why, right? Because he decided for the first time this year to, instead of throw it down the hole and dunk, he actually stepped back and tried to pop one up, and he rimmed it.
Well, you know, that's not his game, but, you know, he's a rookie, and I think, you know, knowing how Brad Stevens values spacing, obviously, I mean, like everybody on the starting lineup to start the season, so the Al Horford, Gordon Hayward, Jaylen Brown, Kyrie Irving, and whoever the other guy was on the start, Jason Tatum, how could I forget Jason Tatum, all are decent to very good, solid three-point shooters. I wouldn't be surprised if by his fourth year you got Robert Williams shooting threes, unless he ends up with a shooting form like Aaron Baines, whose 3-point shooting form is like the most hideous thing I've ever seen in basketball. But aside from Bill Cartwright's shot, the Bill Cartwright behind his head, weird, you know, twisting his wrist thing.
I'm sorry to
ramble on you guys. I didn't mean to hog so much time, but I like the opinions, I like the things I'm hearing, and I hope that you guys agree. Last show I hosted with Sam Sheehan. Sam was on the apocalypse, you know, the apocalypse is coming, the Celtics aren't, you know, I'm used to Sam Sheehan being like the, you know, jokey mustache guy. And
I know,
really,
right?
You know, I'm like usually like upbeat, and I'm like laughing about, you know, Fournier's hair plugs from the Magic or whatever. I'm like making jokes about everything. And it totally bummed me out that I had, you know, the opening monologue from Sam Sheehan was, the Celtics are going down. And I was like, no, not Sam, not the mustache guy. But I think that this is going to be a game they can build. The Pelicans was a good game. This is a good game to follow up. But then again, we saw good games like that Detroit Pistons game a month back.
Right.
And the Toronto game.
It didn't end up doing too much. Yeah, so.
Yeah. All right, man. Well, we'll talk to you later, Nick. Thank you for the call.
Thanks, Nick.
Awesome show, guys.
Yeah,
thanks,
so
bud.
I've got tomorrow night's post game with that coward, Sam Sheehan, so we'll see if he's in a better mood tomorrow night on a Saturday night. I think Nick made a bunch of good points, and I want to really talk about the optimism surrounding this team, because I'm 20 years old, so all I've seen in my life as a Boston sports fan is titles, so it's pretty tough for me to lose optimism. But before we jump into the optimism talk, I do want to remind you that we have our toll-free call line, 347-215-7771. Again, that's 347-215-7771. Joe and I will be here till 10:30 taking your calls. Before we get back into conversation, I do want to play this commercial from Boston Barber and Tattoo Company.
Every neighborhood has a heartbeat, a place that represents what being home is all about. In Boston's historic North End, that place is Boston Barber and Tattoo Company. Boston Barber and Tattoo Company has become home to A-list celebrities like Gordon Hayward, Brad Marchand, Milan Lucic, Aaron Baines, and the list goes on over the years. It's more than just Boston's most well-known corner barbershop. It's a spot to catch up while getting lined up. And it's also a tourist attraction for the hundreds of thousands of people that visit the North End throughout the year. Boston Barber and Tattoo Company, a North End landmark that represents the epicenter of the neighborhood at its core, located at 113 Salem Street.
So thanks again to Boston Barber and Tattoo Company. You want to get a haircut like Hayward, some tattoos like Rozier, head up there, get it done. Maybe at the same time, maybe not. I don't know. Anyways, I'm still very optimistic about this Celtics team. They went into the New Orleans game on Monday, 10-10, to 12-10 now after tonight's win. I'm still very optimistic. I think there's a lot of time, you know, between now and the playoffs. I think there's a lot of time between now and the All-Star break for them to figure things out. Brad Stevens is a good enough coach. There's obviously enough talent there for them to really get back into the swing of things and you know, find themselves atop the Eastern Conference, or at least close to the top of the Eastern Conference, you know, come playoff time. And I think the biggest driver behind all of that, behind my optimism, is Kyrie Irving. You look at tonight's game, and Kyrie was the best player on the floor from the opening tip to the final whistle. You know, or in his 27 minutes, he had 29 points on 11 of 15 from the field. He shot 5 of 7 from 3. You know, knocked down two of his four free throws, had four assists, four boards. He was a plus 26. This year, Kyrie Irving is playing different basketball than I've ever seen him play in my life. He's still got the buckets whenever he wants it. The dude's a walking bucket. He's been a walking bucket since he was at Duke, since his first year in Cleveland, since the championship year in Cleveland, since last year in Boston, since this year in Boston. He's a bucket. Everybody knows that. But this year, Kyrie is playing more complete basketball than I've ever seen him. And I've watched a lot of basketball, or a lot of Kyrie Irving basketball in my day. LeBron James is my favorite athlete, so I would watch the Cavs religiously the past 4 years. So I've seen Kyrie play, watch every Celtics game, seen Kyrie play enough. As I've said twice now, I really want to reiterate, Kyrie Irving is playing different basketball than I've ever seen him play. Is it MVP ball? No. He doesn't have the numbers that a Giannis or an AD is going to have. Even though, you know, in other years, in more guard-dominant years, you see a guy like him go for MVP. His numbers aren't there now. But the way he's playing complete basketball is really inspiring to watch, because he's challenging himself on the defensive end of the floor like I've never seen him do before. Adi Chin was talking about it before the game, that Kyrie said for his first 7 or 8 seasons in the league, you know, he could get away with being just an offensive player because he was that good at offense. He didn't have to challenge himself on defense. This year, Tommy Heinsohn called him fat, called him overweight, and since then, it looks like he's been challenging himself every night, night in and night out on the defensive end. Not necessarily on-ball defense, but just playing so much harder. He's number 6 in the league with, number 6 in the league with 1.9 steals per game. He's number 5 in the league with 2.1 loose balls recovered per game. And he's top 15 in the league with 3.0 deflections per game. Last year, year before that, any year in his career, you're never going to see Kyrie Irving in the top 10s, top 15s, top 5s of defensive categories. But this year, we're seeing a completely different player. And I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that he doesn't have hardware in his knee, which makes it so he has to kind of like, you know, rest and take rest plays. This year, he can go all out. He can play more like a younger him. And I'm not saying he was a defender when he was young, but this year, you combine that age that he's got, you know, 26, 27 years old. He's got years under his belt. He's got another level of health, and he understands that if this team's going to win, he's got to be the driving engine on both sides. And he's rising to the occasion, Joe. I mean, I said it's inspiring, and maybe that's exaggerating, but just like seeing the transformation this guy makes from year to year to year, like mentally and physically, on the floor, off the floor, it's just wild, and it's what you need from the best player on the championship team.
No, you're absolutely right. I mean, I have a slightly different take on it. I do think that what you're seeing defensively from Kyrie is hard work paying off. I mean, he's actually making a strong commitment to being a fully rounded player both sides of the ball, and it's completely evident. The points per game and the MVP chase, to your point, it's not going to happen on this team because there's so much talent around him, and he knows it. And he knows that he can exploit it. So when the defense collapses on him, he can kick out. And we saw that multiple times tonight. We've seen it multiple times over 22 games. One of the points that, you know, the optimism from tonight's game, you know, they did what they were supposed to do. And, you know, they destroyed a team they should destroy. What I'm looking forward to is the backside of this back-to-back tomorrow in Milwaukee. I mean, you're going up against the second best team currently in the Eastern Conference. They're 15-6. They're playing lights out. I think they just won their last game. And
I don't want to curse your bubble, but they're playing the T-Wolves.
Oh, I'm sorry, my bad. I thought they were playing the Bucks.
Yeah, you're all good.
Oh, that killed me. I had a whole thing planned for that.
I know. I didn't want you to go in a whole monologue and then have it, you know, rug pulled out from under you. I thought I'd pull it out from under you early.
Oh, they're playing the 11-11 crap Wolves. but they have won 4 in a row. So, you know, I want to see them start building. I guess what my overall point is, regardless of who the opponent's going to be, I want to see them start stringing it together. You know, I want to see them start playing consistent basketball all the way around. You know, not win one and then dove two and then win two and then dive three. I want to start seeing consistent basketball all the way around. I'm optimistic on the season as a whole because I do see, you know, there's just so much going for this team that it would be the ultimate disappointment to see this team fall flat. And sadly, unlike you, I have lived through the thin years with this team and all the teams in Boston because I'm far older than 20. So I do still have my you know, I still am a card-carrying member of the Fellowship of the Miserable prior to all the championships. But when I look at this team and I compare it to the historic teams, specifically in the Celtics, that I've watched since I was a kid, and I really got into basketball right around 1983, 84. So during the highlight, and then I watched it go low light shortly thereafter. I love what I see on this team. And, you know, you and I had kind of talked about it in a few of our other broadcasts about, you know, each player finding, understanding, and embracing their role. And I wanted to touch on something Nick had brought up in his call real quick before I end this. And just say, I want Nick to know, I wasn't taking anything away from Jaylen Brown, the player, Jaylen Brown, the person, or Jaylen Brown, the intellect beyond the game. What I was getting at was, it seems like this year versus last year, the numbers don't lie. They're way off this year versus last. And in my personal opinion, it's based almost entirely on his role this year versus last, his disinvolvement in the game, in the overall game plan, not his disinterest in playing, but the game plan not funneling through him as much as it did last year. And, you know, my solution to that moving forward would be to kind of alternate the starts, you know, so I don't really want him coming off the bench game in, game out, and then see where we are down the road. I'd like to see more of a, you know, explain the role to him. You know, this night you're starting, the next night you're coming off. This night you're starting, the next night you're coming off. Build in a plan, especially to a cerebral player like Jaylen Brown, where he can then anticipate, he preps, he knows what he's got coming down the pike at him, rather than throwing it at him or throwing him out there, and he's fledgling a little bit. And, you know, the numbers don't lie. So I'd like Brad specifically to find a role for Jaylen and then explain that role to Jaylen, then ergo have Jaylen embrace that role. And I think that can only serve to help him or any player on the court if they know what they're coming into when they're going into it.
I agree. And I'm just going to bring Nick back on for, you know, 5 seconds. He let me know he had some more he needed to talk about.
Awesome.
Nick, what's up?
My bad. I just had to jump back in real quick because
all good.
I have to eat a little bit of crow. First of all, I didn't mean to talk about this, but Joe, I know that's not what you meant. I think we're both on the exact same page that
cool.
Jaylen Brown, Jaylen Brown is smart enough to understand what his role is going to be. And obviously it's not because Jaylen Brown is disinterested or untalented or non-talented, but it's completely a consequence of the roles and whatever else it is. But there is one thing, and when I first tuned in, I heard you guys talking, I mentioned Marcus Smart, and I want to say I've been one of the biggest critics of Marcus Smart for his entire 4 years and now 4 and a quarter years in the Boston Celtics, but I like Marcus Smart right now a whole lot. I have to eat some crow on that because I've been criticizing him so long. I think his ability to, like, you look at the box score today, 7 assists, that allows Kyrie Irving to be the scorer that he wants to be, and I agree 100% with what you guys said about Kyrie Irving not being a man defender, but he's shooting the lanes, he's getting a lot of steals, or he's getting significant number of steals. He had a game with like 6 steals in one time, but I really like what Marcus Smart is doing. He's picking his shots. I've actually seen him attack the basket more frequently. He's still not the biggest basket attacker, but he's been attacking the basket more this season than I've seen in the previous 4, where he would drive the paint, jump, and automatically be looking behind him or to the side to kick the ball out. I just wanted to eat some crow and let everybody know, and I'm sure there's some listeners that have heard me for the past 3 years talk trash about Marcus Smart. I like Marcus Smart. I don't think he's a permanent. I like the idea that Joe just said. Rotate the starting lineup a little bit, get a tight rotation, not this, you know, just kind of like just throw things at the wall type of thing.
For
but
sure.
I really like what Marcus Smart has done this year, and that's all I wanted to say. And Jaylen Brown, Joe and I are on the exact same page with that. I think Jaylen Brown is perfectly adaptable. And I'm not even sure that he needs to be sat down and have it explained to him. I think he's smart enough to figure it out. And
oh, absolutely.
You know, and having Brad Stevens sit down and explain it to him, that's cool as well, just to make everything clear, to let him know, listen, we're not trying to, you know, we're not trying to, you know, squeeze you out of this. You're a big part of this as well. But, you know, I think he's already, you know, more than intelligent enough to figure that out. And I know nobody said any different. And I know that it's not his talent that's lacking. It's just people are adjusting. Everybody's adjusting this season. You know, even Kyrie Irving, his game is elevated in certain ways and it may not have been expected. Everybody's adjusting. And I think after the All-Star break, you'll see the fruits of all this kind of bumpy start that we've been seeing. I think come February, March, April, that's when you're going to see this team at its best. Thank you, guys. I appreciate you putting me back on.
Thanks, Nick.
Have a good night. So I want to remind the callers, our call line is 347-215-7771, 347-215-7771. Joe and I will be here for 15 more minutes taking your calls. And 978, what do you got for us?
Mike, I just had a quick question for you.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, go ahead, Mike.
All right. Hey, how you doing, Joe?
Good.
All right, so I'm looking at the schedule leading up to the first of the year here, and the next 8 games that the Celtics have look relatively easy on paper. And then following the 19th game against the Suns, you go to, you know, you've got Milwaukee at home, the Hornets at home, the, you know, 76ers. So you have a tough schedule going all the way up until, like, the 9th of the year, pretty much like the 4th of the year against Dallas. So out of those 16 games in December coming up, what would you like to see out of them in those 16 games to, you know, increase the confidence, and what do you see for them going forward?
Yeah, so I think it's tough. You know, I'm not a big schedule watcher. I look ahead and stuff, but I think when you get into the business of predictions, you build expectations and then you get killed, or you put too low expectations and then, you know, you're just wrong. So I try to avoid predictions, but I mean, if you look at it, up until that game against the Bucks on the 21st, you've got the T-Wolves, the Knicks, the Bulls, the Pelicans, Wizards, Hawks, Pistons, Suns. The Celtics are capable of beating all of those teams. They're more than capable of beating all those teams. In a couple of them, they've already beaten this year. So I think that, as Joe was saying when he started his Milwaukee monologue and then shifted it to the Minnesota monologue, I think the most important part is just stringing together more than 2 wins. This year we've had a handful of stretches where the Celtics will win 2 games and you're like, all right, they're back, and then they go lose 2 games. I think it's important that they start, and obviously this sounds like the most obvious statement in the world, but it's important that they start winning more games than they're losing instead of breaking even all the time. And, like, that doesn't need to be told to any fans. It doesn't need to be told to anybody who knows anything about basketball and sports in general. But we need to see them start stringing together these wins, because even though it feels like it's early in the season, we're almost a quarter of the way through. Actually, we're more than a quarter of the way through. And at some point, the season stops being young. And we're close to that point in my mind. So I think, as you said, Mike, this is a big stretch for them. A handful of easy games. If they can rack up 6-7 wins, that'll be big for this team, especially going into, you know, the stretch of 4 or 5 games that looks like the gauntlet at the end of the year.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, I have the feeling that if you, like, go 500 or less against these 8 teams, you know, up until the Bucks, it's kind of, you know, it's tough sledding after that. So I'm thinking you at least need 5 out of the 8.
Perfect.
You know,
I agree.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, and to piggyback on Taylor's point a little bit, Mike, when I'm looking ahead, you know, through the Timberwolves, Knicks, and Bulls, I mean, the Timberwolves should be your toughest test on the back half of a back-to-back, but the Knicks and Bulls should be cupcakes. And, you know, Taylor will tell you, I think I did a Knicks game with him earlier this year where they just bombed out and played down to the talent and ended up choking it. I'm going to be looking from an analyst position. I'm going to be watching this team and watching how they, you know, how they stomp on the neck, to be honest with you. I mean, I want to see more of what I saw tonight, specifically when they play the Knicks and when they play the Bulls. These are teams that shouldn't even be in their class, and they should, you know, they should absolutely throttle them. And that can be, you know, to Taylor's point earlier, that can be an absolute building block for putting consistency together, finding team chemistry, changing the overall, you know, not belief structure, but changing the overall energy of the team going into games like, oh, no, here we go, we're 500 again. What do? I want them coming out of that, you know, right around the 15th with the Pistons game. I'd love to see them on like a 6-game streak or a 5-game streak where they're just, everything's starting to click for them. Things are coming together. Rotations are shortening. You're seeing an eight, maybe nine deep game each and every game. And not a lot of this side drama that we're reading because the team is a 500 team and it's way below expectations, at least on paper, for where they should be this year. So to your point, yeah, I mean, we'll be watching this right up through the Christmas holiday to see where exactly they start, you know, finding that rhythm and finding more consistency on the court night in, night out, game in, game out.
Yep. And as we approach these last 10 minutes, I do have a couple more points that I want to hit on. But Jerry, West Coast Jerry, wants to jump back in and talk some team chemistry.
Yeah.
What up, J-Dub?
Can you guys hear me?
What's up, Jerry?
Yep,
hey,
yep.
Man. Been enjoying the show, been enjoying the commentary. I like those points that Mick brought up, you know, about Jaylen Brown. But, I, you know, just kind of playing armchair psychiatrist. the guys on this team, they're made out of the right stuff. I think that's undeniable. And they all have this type of experience just from going through the injuries and through the, you know, different routes like Terry didn't, you know, get right straight away into his full potential. He had to work his way up. He's a working man. Tatum's a working guy when you read about his background. Hayward, obviously. Jaylen Brown is got that workman's mentality. And Al Horford, I mean, all these guys are just good guys that you want to play with. And you want to be teammates with, and you want to trust in them. And they established that type of culture because when a guy goes down like Horford, he's going to miss some games this year. He's long in the tooth, and he's had his battles, and he's, you know, he puts it all out on the lines effort-wise on the defense. And that permeates and injects everybody else with that workman mentality. And now you see Kyrie, like you guys were saying earlier, Kyrie is really with hustle and effort on the defensive end. He's setting a real nice tone. It has a good look out there. It's not the same as with LeBron and the Lakers, where he wasn't playing defense the first 15 games, and then, you know, he kind of stepped it up. Kyrie from the get-go, he's showing the right type of leadership, and I think all those guys feel him. And we got the right guy at the helm coaching. I think it's actually a telling sign that Brad Stevens didn't get one Coach of the Year vote from his fellow coaches. And I just think that shows more about him than it does, you know, that he is a good coach. His players like him. He's got a great GM that's fleecing everybody for picks. And they're just basically jealous of the trajectory of the Boston Celtics, which is a trajectory to success going forward. And because they have the right attitude about it, is today's Brad's quote was, "Be the best version of yourself today." I mean, he preaches stuff like that. That stuff like, you know, motivational speaker type stuff. And connoisseur. He's a basketball connoisseur. The guy studies the game all year long. All the stories been written about it, fellas. So we just got to stay positive. Hopefully nobody gets hurt. We know nicks and necks and injuries happen through the year. That's just more opportunity for the next guy to step up and contribute and win, man.
So I agree, thanks, man. And, you know, yeah, yes, sir. And thank you for calling back in. It's always good to hear from people, you know, all around the country. I think
I'll take West Coast Jerry anytime.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I think the point that Jerry made about that workman's mentality, when you've got a team – even from Danny Ainge on down, like these guys, Danny Ainge, Brad Stevens, the entire roster, they're all super talented, and they could probably get away with, you know, being a little bit more, you know, finesse type game and, you know, fitting into systems perfectly and making everything work on paper. But the thing is, we saw that in the beginning of the season, even though the open shots are there, sometimes you just have to play like a dog. And I think Kyrie's really embodied that over the past week or two. Just wanting to get after. And I think this whole team is really getting there. And that's what made this team so good, especially like the Isaiah Celtics. They had no business in some of the positions they found themselves in. You know, going into Oakland and beating the Warriors during the 73-9 season, or maybe it was the year following that. But even so, the reason the Celtics have been successful for the past 4 or 5 years under Brad Stevens is that teams have always played like dogs. And we weren't getting that in the beginning of this season, the first, you know, 10, 15 games. And like I said, the past week or two, a lot of it's because of Kyrie's just you know, desire to just push the ball and play defense now and a completely new player. You see an entire team that's so talented but playing with a level of urgency, and that's so hard for other teams to match in terms of both talent and urgency. It's nearly impossible.
Oops, still sorry, my mic died out. Yep, sorry, my mic died out. So, yeah, on the definitely. On the Kyrie point, I think it's a lead-by-example type mentality. And, you know, I think it also helps specifically playing with these guys on a more regular basis, practicing with them, being around the team as often as he is, specifically with the players he's playing with this year. It's one of those things where, to the layperson, the outside watcher, it comes so easy to Kyrie that it looks like the effort's not quite there. But those of us that have watched Kyrie play, and I'll take my hat off to you, Taylor. You've seen him play a heck of a lot more than I did, because when he played for Cleveland, I only saw him when he played Boston. but I will tell you that there's an aura about him when he plays about, you know, you want to emulate his type of game. And I think the little bump that they saw early on in the season that they're kind of working their way out of now was twofold. It was the first half, I think, you know, as a team, not any individual specific player, but as a team, I think they're buying their own press clippings and just assuming that these dogs in the East were going to lay down for them and they were going to go out, play their game and just dominate. And I think they quickly found out, like, you know, to do a cross sports reference, like the Patriots find out every single Sunday, every team that shows up is playing their Super Bowl against the Patriots. And I think the Celtics quickly found out this season as it began to roll on that every single team, regardless of the win totals, is coming out and playing it like it's game 7 NBA finals against the Celtics, because they are the team to knock off. And I think it took, you know, it's like a boxer in a ring. We took a few haymakers and it stunned them a little bit. It's taking them a little bit of time to kind of find their groove, get back into it, and, you know, put their nose to the grindstone. And Kyrie's leading by example. I mean, he's a special player all around. And by watching a 26, 27-year-old player with plenty of experience in this league and a ring on a finger already, just kind of dedicate himself to yet another facet of the game, it's only expanding his role in expanding, you know, his influence over the rest of his teams. We're watching a guy who's already a leader just cement that legacy a little bit further as he continues to develop.
Yeah, man. I mean, I could gush about Kyrie Irving all day long. 2 weeks ago, he released a commercial, maybe a week ago at this point, he released a commercial playing one-on-one, you know, on the parquet with his dad, talking about how his dad went to BU and wore number 11, and now Kyrie's playing for Boston and he wears number 11. He wants to be the reason nobody else ever wears number 11 for the Celtics, and stuff like that gives me goosebumps, man. But like, the stuff that really gets me going about Kyrie Irving, it's not obviously all like the flashy, you know, up and unders and the layups and the three pointers and like the pass he made to Bainson are big, but just the way he talks and the way he's been talking lately and diving on the floor for those loose balls. You've got one of the more talented offensive players in the world, not just the league, the world, and he's laying it all out there because he knows what it takes to win a chip. He knows it. He's done it. He's watched Bron do it. Like, he knows exactly what it takes, and luckily, he's got the Marcus Morrises and Marcus Smarts and Aaron Baines of the world, you know, alongside him who are willing to do whatever it takes to win. Those guys will go to the, you know, gates of hell to win a championship, and when you see all of that, when you see those older guys, the leaders, guys like Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum and, you know, the Rozier's of the world, they can't help but follow along. So I think that building on these two wins is important, but building on the entire environment and vibe that they seem to have been really trying to construct the past couple of weeks, you know, the past 10 or so games, is really important for this team, because as you and I said on previous shows, it was looking bleak in the beginning. There were some highlights, but there were also some real lowlights, and I think it was tough to watch. But they just have to keep improving. They've got Minnesota tomorrow night. I'll be on that post game with Sam Sheehan. And yeah, it's just another opportunity to go play against a Western Conference team that, even though they've had a lot happen to them this season, Derrick Rose has been playing extremely well. Karl Anthony Towns is still one of the most talented centers in the league. They're not going to roll over, not under Tom Thibodeau. And it's just another opportunity for Celtics to play a new brand of basketball that is proven in winning championships and has proven successful for Brad Stevens and his squad. So that's all we've got for tonight. Want to thank my co-host Joe Choquette for hanging out with me for an hour, taking some calls. I want to thank Jerry and Nick and Mike for calling in, you know, giving some variety to the show. So
yeah, they were great.
Joe Choquette and the CLNS Media Celtics postgame show. This is me signing off.
This has been the Celtics postgame show on CLNSradio.com. Thanks for listening. The Celtics might not be in action every day, but we are, so stay connected. Follow us on Twitter at CLNSRadio and check out our broadcast schedule for the best weekly sports podcasts on the web.
What's going on, but... Oh. But yeah, are you back? Do I have you? Hello?